Let me begin by first welcoming everybody to our January 2008 PPS Success Mastery Coaching Call. It's our first call of 2008. My name is James Phelps, and in addition to being your host today, I'm the Dean of Education for the PPS Success Mastery Program. Before we get started, I want to let you all know that we do record our coaching calls, and you can find the recordings on our website. They're all located on the audio features page of our Food for Thought section on the site. So I invite everybody to visit us there and have a listen to our previous calls or come back in a few days and revisit this one. To begin our call today, Paul's going to talk a bit about dangerous ideas and necessary ideas. After about 15 minutes, we'll open it up for any questions you might have, whether they're about our introductory topic or anything else. So with all those preliminaries out of the way, why don't I turn it over to Paul?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the PPS Success Mastery free call.
Happy New Year, Paul.
Thank you very much. I thought I would talk about briefly about dangerous ideas that paradoxically are also necessary ideas. So I chose two of the most common ideas that fall into that category quite easily. The first one is money, and the second one is religion. So in a few minutes, I'll just try to shed a little bit of BS light on these concepts. So our first dangerous idea is that money brings happiness. Many people, as I'm sure those of you listening are very aware, literally burn themselves out in the pursuit of money, which is also stuck to their pursuit of happiness, due to the fact that we have a cultural idea that money brings happiness. The truth is that money is energy, and happiness is a state of being. Happiness can only exist as an enduring state when an individual achieves body, mind, and soul alignment. Having too much money in the process of finding alignment of your own self-centers, physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual, is often much, much more of a distraction from happiness than a vehicle to happiness. The danger of money is essentially, metaphysically speaking, the same danger that we are faced with regard to matter, and that is that you can lose yourself in it. The same way people lose themselves in money, they lose themselves in matter. And most people use their money to accumulate matter opposed to well-being. As a necessary idea, money is essential for our survival in our industrialized world. Hunting to feed yourself doesn't work well anymore in most places. So money, working to earn money is the equivalent nowadays of what would have been hunting and gathering. Years ago. Those of you that are on the line, if you're listening, mute your phone. James, how do they mute the phone?
Can you mute their line by pressing *6?
Hello?
Hello, everyone. The call's in progress, everyone, so if you're just in listening, please press *6. Otherwise, I can hear everything in the background, and so can everybody else. So money is essential for survival in our industrialized world, and it replaces what would have been our hunting and gathering activities in the past. Money is an energy form. It's a necessary energy form because wherever there's money, there are relationships being created with an energy exchange. If you think about how you use your money, there's literally no relationship, no way you can use money without a relationship. Even if you just stuff it under your pillow, then that's equivalent to financial celibacy. So how you use your money determines to a large degree the kind of relationships you will attract. PPS Success Mastery Lesson 2 is on self-management, and there is an entire lesson later on money management. But I'd like to just point out that if you take a moment and think of what you do with your money, you'll see the kind of relationship you create. For example, what kind of food a person eats determines the kind of relationship they have, particularly in city environments, with the earth. In cities, people don't get to go out into the fields. They're not weeding. They're not plowing. They're not harvesting. They're not picking. They're not mending fences. They're not getting their feet in the dirt. They become extremely disconnected from the earth's energies and from nature and from the nature spirit that support our lives. So the closest they get to the farm is the food. And if they're buying commercially raised food, they're buying food that has been raised in the equivalent of a concentration camp. And that type of food carries that type of energy. And that type of food is not very nutritious whatsoever. That type of food is also laden with farming chemicals. It's very poisonous to the body. So to the degree that a person spends their money on that food, either out of ignorance or out of trying to save money on food, they have to develop a relationship that reflects that at every level of their being. When people spend money on cars, the grand majority of people that are buying cars that they can't afford. So what happens is they look good, but every time they go to pay their bills, they're under tremendous stress. They're in debt. People buy things for people to get leverage over them. Many people use gifts as leverage, not as a gift. So if you just look honestly at how any one of you is using money, you'll come to be able to make a list of the positive relationships that you have with money and the negative relationships that you have with money. And if you just follow the line of energy and see what it's creating, you can literally correlate your relationship with money as energy with your relationships with people as energy, with your relationships with exercise, with your spiritual practice. And here's an opportunity to state a truism. They say the way you do anything is the way you do everything. So where you're strong, you'll probably do well. Some people are very good at managing money, and therefore, when they buy things, it doesn't cause stress for them. So there's not as much spiritual growth and development for them there because they've got a level of mastery at that level. They may be growing in their sexual relationships, or they may be growing in their communication skills or their creative abilities. So each person will have a different gift by analyzing their relationship to money. So our next dangerous idea that is also a necessary idea is religion. The dangers of religion come in many ways. First and foremost, more people have died due to religious warfare than any other form of death that has ever visited the planet. It's not even a contest. If you look at the number of people that have died in religious wars, as a matter of fact, to my knowledge, there's not a single war that has been fought in this world that did not have a religious bent to it. Religions are systems of confirmation. When one conforms, to the degree that you conform to a religious system, it attenuates exploration. Yet life itself is an exploration. To the degree that anyone conforms to a dogma, they must therefore, to that degree, retard their own evolution. Religions encourage spiritual pride, spiritual prejudice, and genocide, which is all what creates encapsulation of the ego or hardening of the ego as terms to describe isolation as opposed to integration. these very things also encapsulate the soul. Whenever you encapsulate yourself and crystallize the ego, it encourages the formation of disease. And isn't it interesting that today we have more people claiming religious affiliation probably than ever. 85% of the world population claims religious affiliation. Yet while we have the highest level of scientific achievement on record, that doesn't mean it is the case because they still can't build a pyramid, but we have enough scientific advancement to build high-tech computers, cars, airplanes, jets, and do space travel. We have the so-called most advanced medical system in the world, but at one and the same time, we've got the most diseased world population that's ever been on the planet. So you see these imbalances in money, and these imbalances in the force of religion are manifesting themselves on the planet as disease. Most religions put a wall between you and God. Whenever you put a wall between you and God for any reason, it creates in metaphysics what is referred to as existential separation, which by definition is evil. It's anti-life. If God is the highest principle that a person can possibly believe in, any religious system that separates them from that principle is the equivalent of cutting the umbilical cord when a child is not yet ready to be on its own. Religions often stifle, block, disrupt, and create pain with regard to natural human instincts. They make things such as sex dirty and sinful. Art. Religion made art at many times in the past dirty and sinful and had to be carefully controlled. Self-exploration was forbidden. Wealth accumulation was frowned upon. Many religions have very strict eating practices. For those of you that are interested, I wrote two articles called Vegetarianism Inside Out. Part one looks at the physiological aspects of vegetarianism. Part two looks at the spiritual aspects. And I show numerous cases where within given religions, high-ranking officials within the religion itself could not agree on whether or not vegetarianism was necessary for spiritual development. So there's confusion within individual religions. Many religions have strict rules about what you can wear as clothing. Some of them are pro-body, and the Abrahamic religions are not supportive of the body at all. And all you got to do to prove that to yourself is go to any one of the temples where any Abrahamic religion is practiced and look at the physical condition of the people practicing the religion, and you will see that we do not have body, mind, and soul alignment. We have a system that caters to one aspect of the human being, and to the degree that we focus our energies in one area, it creates body, mind, and soul alignment. Any part of the human structure is married to the others. The physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual are one entangled hierarchy, one energetic web. And any practice that focuses on one and leaves the other to diminish is essentially to the equivalent of leaving a very large hole in your business plans, your travel plans, your financial plans. It is to open and invite disaster. It also leaves people very perplexed because when they spend lots of time in their so-called religious practice but then get a disease, they think God is punishing them. And I'm qualified to tell you this because for 24 years I've been counseling patients of all types with almost every disease you can think of, and I've seen this over and over and over and over again. I'd also like to conclude that religion is a necessary idea. I am not anti-religion at all. I am anti-dogma. I'm not a supporter of anything that misleads people. I'm not a supporter of any religion that teaches God is love and then signs little love notes on bombs that are being dropped on Muslims' heads, etc. Religion is a necessary idea because it's intended as a means of sharing or cross-pollinating methods for spiritual development. The further back you go in any religion, the more you will find a bunch of people sitting around a campfire sharing ways that they've learned to meditate, ways they've learned to find ecstasy, ways they've learned to find enlightenment. True religion encourages unity consciousness. Wherever religion is being practiced as it is intended to be practiced, it increases unity. It increases cohesiveness. It increases communication, and it decreases the likelihood of disease, because where there is truly religion, there is tremendous support for people, and they never feel alone, they never feel isolated, and they have the support of the equivalent of a larger family or tribe. True religion breaks down racial, ethnic, and physical barriers when embraced for what it is meant to be. No true religion of any type would ever embark in genocide or any other religious warfare over ideology. Throughout time, there's obviously been situations where people practicing a given religion were invaded and their property was being abused and their belongings were being stolen by people that were using religion as a means of collecting wealth, which, by the way, the Vatican to this day is the world's largest corporation with financial holdings so large that nobody even comes close. That's something to meditate on. Religion provides family for community, and there are many that really need it. And in providing family for community, again, it minimizes disease. Religion encourages the sharing of wealth among participants and therefore community building. Where there is true religion, there will be people that are more evolved in their ability to accumulate wealth. And those people in true religions teach the other people in their communities and in their societies how to accumulate wealth. But if you study the priesthood is a very, very strictly controlled system of doctrine and controlling people. And the idea was not to share wealth and not to share knowledge and to keep people stupid so they're easy to control. And this is heavily documented. True religion fosters happiness, well-being, and contentment. Where you see people that are practicing religion as it is meant to be, they are usually much happier than the people around them. True religion encourages the development of knowledge through sharing. True religion creates union with God and the universe and with nature. It does not see nature as something to be overpowered and destroyed. If you study the history of Christian missionaries, you will find some shocking, saddening evidence of the trail of destruction, abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, psychological abuse. And you will find, if you follow the land deeds backwards all over the world, that Christian missionaries ended up owning thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of acres everywhere they went, by essentially conning the natives out of their belongings, by teaching them the concept of sin and that they wouldn't get to heaven practicing the religions they were practicing. It makes me extremely sad because it's still going on today. As a matter of fact, if you go to the museum in Lahaina, Hawaii, there's a brass plaque on the wall, and it says right on that brass plaque, prior to the arrival of Christian missionaries, there were no cases of disease on record amongst the Hawaiian Islanders. The missionaries brought with them processed food, and they brought with them diseases that were common to the white man but not seen amongst the natives, which caused the equivalent of plagues amongst many of them. Many of them, thousands, died, for example, from the common flu because they had no defense against it. I'll close my little discussion on necessary ideas and dangerous ideas by saying that I am pro-religion. I am anti-dogma. The PPS program is a program that I've developed to the very best of my ability to teach people how to manage their own mind and how to find body, mind, and soul alignment so that they have true happiness and well-being, so that they can be astute observers of patterns of energy and participate in creating the reality that they want, not the one they're being sold. Would anybody like to ask a question?
An unrelated question, Paul.
All right.
Okay. Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you. And to you.
A lady in my gym for the new year has been trying to, I guess, reconstitute her arm. She had a, I guess we could call it a tumor of sorts, a myoblastoma in her brachial plexus on her left arm. It was excised in total, and it is somehow innervating C5 and C6 in her spine. And she really doesn't have any type of functionability in terms of adduction in her arm or any ability to bear weight. She's in New York, and all the doctors have put her to sleep.
Say that again?
She lives in New York here, and she's been bouncing around with physical therapists for over 3 years, going through the one-size-fits-all physical therapy. And my question, I guess, to you is, once a nerve is cut or severed, can it possibly, through any type of joint mobility or function, reroute like collateral circulation in your heart?
If the nerve is cut, but the rest of the nerve is there, so if you just think of it like a piece of string.
Right.
If you just cut the string. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, there's going to be scar tissue formation. Second of all, under ideal conditions, nerves regenerate at a rate of approximately 1 millimeter per day.
1 millimeter a day.
So if the tumor was excised and they cut the nerves, because didn't you say it was a tumor in the nerve itself?
It was in the radial nerve pathway at the brachial plexus.
Right. So the question is, was it a neurological tumor or was it a soft tissue tumor?
It was a neurological made up of nerve cells.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, they may have cut a huge section out of there.
Yeah.
And it's highly unlikely that without a what's called a nerve graft, mm-hmm. that she is going to regain the function of those nerves. You're much more likely to have to teach her how to use the existing muscles to compensate as effectively as possible. Basically, what you've got is exactly what I had to deal with when I was treating polio patients in my physical therapy clinic, mm. or paralysis patients.
I see. So could you recommend for me, or are you aware of anyone in the New York metropolitan area or a book or some area that I could explore to help this person out?
Michael Jackson is a Czech level 4 practitioner who's extremely skilled, and he's also a licensed physical therapist.
Okay.
And he's on my website.
Okay.
And if for some reason you cannot get in with him, my next suggestion would be Basil Butcher, who's also a Czech level 4.
I know he's in New York City and Brooklyn, yeah, sure. So I would direct her to those individuals, one or either, and probably they can make some sort of progress with her. Because she's getting bounced around here in New York. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I would start with Michael Jackson. He's going to have more of that type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't work with her for some reason, then your next bet is Basil Butcher.
Fantastic, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions?
Hello, Paul?
Yes.
Paul, I'm Emre from Toronto. How are you?
Pardon me?
This is Emre from Toronto.
I heard from Toronto. I didn't hear your name.
That's enough. It's Emre. E-M-R-E.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have actually many questions because I recently purchased the last four doctors you ever need book.
Yeah.
It's well put together, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
And the values, I was about building business. And then I realized that first I have to build my values so I can build my philosophy for the business.
Right.
Is that a right pattern?
That's 100% correct. That's why BBS Season 1 is developing your core values and determining what your legacy is. Because if you don't have values, you don't have any idea why you're going into business or what you need as an individual, then the chances are that you'll easily get distracted, pulled off your business plan, and next thing you know, you'll find yourself in a world of hurt. This is also why so many business owners burn themselves out running businesses, because they don't have clearly defined self-values, which in the master program we call the I value, the me values. So at a level of a business, most businesses are operating all values. The system that I teach is I, we, all. First, you must care for yourself, because it is from yourself that you give love and energy to other people. So if you think of a human being like a battery, and think of a business like a huge draw on the battery, because you're interacting with so many people, you don't have core values, you won't charge your own battery, so you're far more likely to run business challenges due to lack of self. And as the health and well-being of the business owner diminishes, by default, too much the business relationship, because there will be less and less energy to commit to any relationship in the business. So the mastery program step is identifying and getting very clear on your core values, and it takes you through processes that go a lot deeper than the last four doctors were talking. The last four doctors book was really just making you don't have core values, you do not get very far, but the inner exploration and method teach in the mastery program will be far deeper in that to prepare you for running and managing it.
And I have one more question.
Okay.
Through discovering my values, I'm living with my partner, who I really love. Her name is Kim. I recommend her to do the work to discover her values as well, because I realize that we have accurate problems in the relationship. Like, if you ask us, we love each other, like, all the way down, but at the same time, we have repetitive arguments about certain things. And then I realize when she makes points about certain things, about the values, sometimes her value doesn't make sense to me. Now, I like to be informed about that.
So what's the question?
The question is that possible that one person's value doesn't make any sense to another person's value?
That's the most common reality there is in the world. That's why you see arguing and fighting and not getting along. And this is why chief personal professional spiritual mastery is probably the hardest path any any individual can follow. It's actually a lot easier just to violent and ignore people and criticize them and not participate in your own evolution and just lead things as they are. So this is why, like, friends get into over a core value and never speak to each other again. I've had many patients who have fallen out with their parents when they're in their teens, and they haven't spoken to their mother or their father in 20 over one issue. You see, it's far easier just to walk away than it is to really participate in life and become some more beautiful. The secret is that we all have to give the other person room to experience their core values. Ultimately, all of us are very, very visually human. The problem with family relationships is that nobody likes to be told what to do, because even if inner core values were actually more likely to bring happiness and success than her core values, see that she does what you tell her to do. It is often perceived as a lost autonomy, which means he's become your servant or something along those lines. So you'll see people that have not yet healed their ego and to a point of self-love will be very, very defensive, even against the best advice. You see this all the time in a medical practice. You have people that pay you $5 an hour. And my first visit ranges between $6,000 to $10,000, and it's not uncommon at all for me to see them in 4 weeks, and they've only done 10% the things that I shared that with their disease process. And when I look into it, what I find is that a lot of these people are using their disease to manipulate other people into their own core value structure. That way, they can do it without being told to. So they use a person's empathy or passion for them, the family member, a friend, etc., as leverage against them to succumb to their core values. And that behavior overflows right into the doctor's office and right into the therapist's office. So at that point, what I've got to do is I've got to really get clear with them whether or not they're even been recovering from the disease, or whether they're just trying to see me as an expensive therapist to fortify their position, saying, look, even this guy couldn't fix me. Isn't that terrible? You need to love me. I might die, whatever. So I'm always real cautious as to where an individual is at with their values, because to the degree that they have any pathology, they have to find their own core values. So the secret is tell your mother what to do. The secret is to let her see what it looks like to live your own core values, and they produce happiness, well-being, and success. And then own steam. You'll see if you begin to get you.
So living by example.
That's the only way. Remember, there's two ways to tell a person a trailer. You can push it and it'll kick the shit out of you, or you can put it there and it'll kick your toes and it'll follow you right in.
Is anybody else Paul speak?
I hear your
yeah, the connection is not very good, actually.
Yeah.
Every time you speak,
I'm getting a tremendous echo. I'm sorry, I can't interpret that.
Yeah, we're having
it sounds as though you're on the moon to me.
I think that it's been fixed now.
Okay.
Hearing better?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah. Was there another question there? And first of all, are we finished with the core values question? I take that as a yes. Yes.
If we have time, I can ask one more because it's important.
Okay. There's a lady that's trying to ask a question, I think. And I can always come back to you. Was there a lady asking me? I guess that's it. So, yes, your next question.
Yes, we are having this. We are having this conversation, but I'm going to give you an example so you can maybe help more. She asked me yesterday that she needs to hear that I love her once a week, and I said, "Well, this is not a value. Like you don't have any value. Depend on it." And then I don't know if I judged her or I'm not being fair, so I'm a little bit confused about it.
Well, first of all, that was really nice of her to tell you what she needs. The first thing you've got to know to love anybody is what makes them feel loved. A lot of times what we're doing is we're loving people the way we want to be loved. And frequently, more frequently than not, that's not the way the other person wishes to be loved. So if your mother has explained to you what makes her feel loved, how hard is it to say I love you once a week, even once every 3 days, double it up? There's no such problem as too much love. Never happens if it's real love. It's impossible. Love is a zero mathematically. Zero times anything is zero. Zero divided by anything is zero, which means the more you love another person, the more love you get. The more you give love, the more love you have to give, and the more love comes back to you. So whenever we're in relationships with people where there's any level of intimacy, personal relationships, mother, family, friends, lovers, to the degree that we can come to understand what makes that person feel loved, we can then offer that love to them in a way that they can see and feel as love. Otherwise, we're just assuming that we are loving them and they may not be feeling love at all. And that oftentimes leads to catastrophes in relationships. And typically what you see is people getting a broken heart because they really felt that they were loving the other to the best of their ability, yet what they find out in the end is that the other person didn't feel loved at all. And I can tell you from having been through a divorce myself and having counseled many people that have gone through a divorce, that when you spend a number of years loving someone and really feeling as though you are loving them, and you find out with a marriage counselor that they never felt loved the whole time, they felt used, it's really quite a shock to the system, and it can hurt quite deeply. So my recommendation would be for everybody listening to always be brave enough, open enough, honest enough, and willing enough to ask anybody in a relationship, whether it be a child, your own child, whether it be aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, anybody who has a close relationship with you that you spend time with, how best can I love you? What is it that I can do to express my love to you that would make you feel as though you were being loved? And what an amazing gift to give anybody. And typically what you'll find is the most common answer is, I just enjoy being with you. You won't hear someone say, well, I enjoy it when you tell me how to eat. I enjoy it when you tell me what to do. I enjoy it when you tell me my religion's all fucked up. People don't do that. People will tell you what makes them feel loved. What causes so many fights in families is that we're always telling each other what's wrong with each other, not what's right. Do you understand that answer?
I do understand. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Any other questions before I say,
Paul?
Yeah?
I have a question, if I may.
You may. It is your turn.
Thank you. I've been reading your PPS program, and in lesson 10 on relative existence, I don't get what you're saying most specifically. It says the secret here is not to get rid of the, you're talking about the gargoyles, and you say the secret is to manifest what you want within the field of relativity. And that whole thing, I don't get. So if you could just kind of expound on that a little bit.
Again, whose lessons are you reading?
Yours.
I know, but are you a PPS practitioner?
I was given it by one.
Okay. That's probably why you're not understanding it, because you're way, way up in the training there. It's kind of like jumping into a year's worth of training at the end. So there's a lot of things missing in the framework that you're trying to interpret it through. Essentially, what I'm saying there is that there's two primary forces that control the universe.
Right.
The forces of yin and
right.
The forces of yang. So the yin forces are the creative, nurturing female forces, and the yang forces are the hot, fiery, destructive forces, or the male forces. What I'm saying is that to the degree that there are angels, so let's just, you know, most people look at angels as a very, very high level of divine expression. But because an angel is perceived by somebody as a divine expression or highly positive, it must have its negative counterpart, which would be a gargoyle.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot have in a field of relativity anything that exists as one side of a polarity potential without its opposite, or it wouldn't exist. Because in relativity, all things are moving. All things are changing. Day becomes night. Night becomes day. Winter, spring, summer, fall. We change positions in the galaxy. We're in different astrological signs and different ages. We're coming into the age of Aquarius. So everything is a cycle within a cycle, like Russian dolls. And these forces move things. For example, if there was no such thing as evil, would there be any need for good? You wouldn't even know what it was. So what I'm explaining in that lesson is that it's a beginning stage of human evolution to walk around and preach the good. So you have people knocking on your door trying to get you to convert to their favorite religion and telling you it'll save you from hell and that you can be forgiven of your sins to the very degree that you actually believe that what you're doing is good or what you're doing is bad or what you're doing is sinful or what you're doing is, you know, essential, you must by default attract the opposite to you, which is exactly why Buddha, Lao Tzu, Osho, and many great teachers teach that there is no God. For example, Buddhism doesn't believe in God like a Christian God. Buddhism doesn't even use the word God. Neither does Zen, because typically people use the word God as an extreme positive. And to the degree that is an extreme positive God, you must by default have the opposite, Lucifer or the devil. These polarities are used through very careful programming to get people to follow doctrines, and they use the technologies that I describe in PPS Success Mastery Lesson 2.
Okay. Thank you. I think that answers another question I was going to say in this chapter. You make a lot of reference to Chapter 2, which I did not read. So I think I need to go back and read Lesson 2.
Yeah, well, that's a very, very, that's a very, very deep lesson. My recommendation would be, instead of reading somebody else's manual, that you become a student so you can actually watch the slideshows and hear the lectures and and get the training properly. Otherwise, you're always going to be sort of half-educated, which is half the job.
Okay. And how do you do that?
You can go to the PPS Success Mastery website, and you can see the different plans that are available there and decide at what level you want to commit yourself. There's a number of different options there for you that I would love to see you get properly trained. Otherwise, what happens is you have all these holes in your understanding, and it also leads to a lot of misunderstanding of me as a teacher. I've had this many, many times. People have approached me and said, oh, I don't agree with what you said in such and such a lesson. And I asked them, are you a PPS practitioner? No. Well, then how do you know what I said? Oh, I read my friend's manual. Well, you missed all the lectures. Mm-hmm. The course is not complete unless you have all the lectures and the manual and you attend the calls and listen to the related audios. Otherwise, it would be like if I took you to a 3D movie and not only did give you 3D glasses, I made you wear an eye patch. Mm-hmm. And after the movie's over, when we're all talking about the most amazing experience of the goblins and the witches coming right out of the movie screen and touching our face, what the hell are you talking about? That never happened. I said, yeah, it did. But they didn't know you didn't have 3D glasses on. I want you to have 3D glasses on.
Got it.
And also, you can feel free to contact me, James, by email, and that's Dean, D-E-A-N, at ppssuccess.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions or talk to you about the program and so forth. So.
And what did you say, James, what did you say that the address was?
Sure, it's Dean, D-E-A-N.
Dean, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like
Thanks.
Dean of Education, yeah, at PPS Success, yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's a good question. Are there any other questions before I say goodbye?
Hi, Paul, my name is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
And I have a question for you. I've been divorced, and I'm currently brave enough to jump into another relationship. And I'm realizing while reading your The Four Doctors that my values and my current partner's values are different. I'm almost feeling that you almost have to have the exact same values for a relationship to be successful. Is that true?
No, it isn't. I got a question for you. Do you know why I divorced my daughter? Are you there?
Paul, I didn't hear the question.
Do you know why divorce is worse? Expensive?
I still can't hear the last part of it. It's breaking up.
Hey, James, can you tell her the question?
We're getting a bit of an echo effect again. So what's happening is being caused by the particular line. So I'm going to mute that line for a second. And then Paul can ask the question, and then I'll unmute it again. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay,
Paul, go ahead.
My question is, do you know why divorce is so expensive?
So why is divorce so expensive?
Yeah, do you know why?
No.
Because it's worth it. It's a chance to grow. It's a chance to find yourself. So here's the answer to your question. No, you don't need to have a partner with core values, but what you do need to do is determine whether or not the discrepancy in the core values is something you can comfortably live with. Oftentimes, having somebody with different core values can be a tremendous opportunity to learn and to grow. Some core values you may not be able to live with. Well, if you absolutely cannot stand the smell of cigarettes or even kissing people that smoke cigarettes, and your partner refuses to quit smoking cigarettes, that could be a core value that would really be bloomed on a relationship if there's intimacy involved. So, you know, a core value that can work in a relationship is things like if somebody says, well, I need $100,000 at the bank to save and secure, and the other partner only needs $10,000 in the bank, then you can overcome that and say, okay, you go ahead and put your $100,000 in the bank, but I'm going to feel safe and secure long before then. And then the next question you got to ask is, well, how much time does that person spend working to create that level of safety and security for themselves?
We have an echo again.
Pardon me?
We have an echo again.
Yeah, there's nothing I can. Did you understand what I said so far?
To me, it sounds like almost like a compromise.
And what is a relationship if it's not a compromise?
It's tough dealing with someone who has such a strong core values. And to be honest, I'm the weak link in the sense where if someone's values are stronger than mine, I tend to give up mine and try not to harbor resentment. And I'm telling you, that's a challenge.
It is a challenge. That's why I said earlier, being a peacekeeper is not easy. And you know, the behavior that you described is a very, very common behavior for mothers. It's a very common behavior for females in relationships, particularly if they had dominating fathers or domineering mothers. A lot of eating disorders come out of exactly that behavior model. So my advice to you would be, if you're going to make a compromise on one of your core values, then the relationship needs to also support his compromise on a core value that maybe you don't. Otherwise, what happens is you can do what's actually called falling in love. Any relationship worth maintaining allows you to rise in love, become a better person, more whole person, more well-supported, more nourished, more educated. A real relationship is the equivalent of religion. But if you fall in a relationship, then you have actually wounded yourself and wounded your heart. And unfortunately, you can look at the statistics of divorce today, about 50% of marriages end within 2 years. Why? Because people fall in love, and because religion has taken in Western society to think they have to be married in order to actually make a value statement to the other person, or to have sex with each other and all these other ridiculous things. People actually get married out of this idea that it's necessary to express love. They haven't even learned who the other person is yet. It takes years to even figure out to sleep. So my advice to you would be, use your past marital relationships as education to get very clear on what you do not want in the next relationship. Otherwise, you'll just jump right out of the pen and into the fire.
Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. Just remember, if there's really love, honestly, whenever there's really truly love in a relationship, it's easy. It flows. That doesn't mean you don't have arguments once in a while or disagreements. But the inner sense of connection is so strong that the argument relationship just an event. You know, a glass of milk falling off the table. You look at each other and decide who's going to clean it up or clean it up together and on issue. To the degree that events become issues and challenging, and you can't sit with the other person, they don't like the clothes you're wearing, or they don't like your show, or, you know, the more that stuff goes on, the more the lesson is get into relationships who are that separate core values. You can really find yourself. in love with yourself first. And when you don't need anybody in a relationship, it puts you in a very powerful position. Because when you're not 80 in a relationship, you can do whatever you want to. And a person that doesn't have 80-ness is also very, 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 I'm fortunate to have people like that in my life, and I try my best to. Are there any other questions? Looks like we're done for the day, James.
Well, great. There's a lot of...
Wait.
Oh.
Dear. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I've been married for 27 years, and I'd say that I am the giver in the relationship of, when I say giver, I mean sacrificing things that I want in order to have a harmonious relationship. Mean by that is there are things that I would like to do, places I would like to go, or whatever that my husband might not particularly want to go. So, he doesn't want to go, no big deal, and, you know, move on. There are other things to do. Then again, there's some things that I really feel that I want before my life is over and or I'm too old to enjoy it, I want to do. But I don't want to... I have a spouse who can be very nasty if he wants to be. And what do you recommend?
What I recommend is that you get clear on what a spouse is, because I don't have a spouse.
I'm sorry? Because what?
I said I recommend you get real clear on what a spouse is. It doesn't sound to me like you have a spouse. It sounds to me like you have a combination between a keeper and a very expensive dog.
Things have no answer for me.
That's not a marriage. That's a jail sentence. So either get out of jail free card and leave it on the desk on the way to the airport or go on vacation, or continue to be a victim of your own choices because you've stayed in the relationship by choice. If you're ready to spread your wings and fly, now's the time. And I got news for you. The longer you stay in a relationship under those conditions, the more you actually fortify your husband's pathology. You're supporting codependence. You're doing the equivalent of giving a cigarette smoker cigarettes while they're dying of cancer. The cancer in the relationship is that there isn't one. When you really are in a relationship, the word relationship means relationship. You can tell from the tone of your voice you're not elated to be in this situation. You really love somebody and you don't have a relationship. Whenever you see them, you become elated. It's exciting. I think you'll be a lot more excited about your relationship when you're gone for about a month to Egypt and to some of the places that you want to visit, and you have time to truly do what you want to do and not have to cook and clean and be a certain way for anybody and worried about barked at or bitten, and in that time, while your husband's washing dishes, cooking for himself, and learning just how amazing his wife is, I bet you he'll just turn from this flaming sword into the softest, most cuddly little teddy bear you ever saw.
Oh, boy, would I love to see that.
Well, prove it. Talk is cheap, my dear.
Okay, thank you.
You always get what you want.
I'm sorry?
You always get exactly what you want. Would you like me to prove that to you?
Sure.
What does the word God mean?
God?
Yep. What does it mean?
Super being.
Huh?
Super being.
The word God means all, with a capital A, a capital L, and a capital L. The word God means omniscient, omnipotent.
Right.
Omnipresent.
Correct.
Guess what that makes you, dear?
Nothing.
It makes you nothing and everything at exactly the same time. So to the degree that you have desires, create them. Your husband at one time was your desire, and you're still maintaining that desire. When your desire for change is greater than your own resistance to change, change will happen. In the meantime, I would suggest you get very, very clear with what the word God means and realize that there's nobody but you. The rest of us are just living out ideas that you don't have time to live out. So when you turn on the television or walk down the street, you see the other parts of you that are doing the things that you don't have time to do. And you're also seeing the other parts of you that are doing exactly what you wish to do, but since there's this illusion of separation, you're missing out on that part of you. I would recommend that the God of you go be with the other parts of the God of you that are doing the things that God wants to do, not the things God doesn't want to do. I'm not a religious man, just so you know. Not in the negative sense of the word, anyhow. Where are you going to go on vacation? That was quick. She's already gone.
She's booking her flight.
Yeah. At her, she has truly become no thing.
There you go.
Vacation destination in the world.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I wasn't able to communicate back. I'm saying, hello, hello, and you couldn't hear me. I missed the last part of your last sentence or so.
I just said, where are you going to go on vacation now that you know who you are?
Well, I'm already going to Egypt with him, but I don't know. There's.
You going where?
To Egypt. It was funny when you said go to Egypt. We have to go.
You think funny, do you? You might want to meditate on that.
On what? On the fact that you knew?
Yes. When you figure that out, you'll figure out who you are. Instead of it being concept, it'll be real.
Okay. Hello?
I'm right here.
Okay.
I'm just getting as
my booking my flights and doing that, I know that that is what I should do, but I fear doing that for fear of rocking the boat. I hate controversy. I don't like negative energy. And
then why do you keep living with it? Sounds to me like swimming in it.
Well, I was, but if I were to do that, it would create it.
Well, I think you need to get a little bit more crafty then, because your avoidance of what you're calling, you know, negative energy or stirring the pot is actually the equivalent of leaving the turkey in the oven long past the point at which it's cooked. By the time you get frustrated enough, upset enough, and disappointed enough with yourself for allowing yourself to be pushed around in the relationship and not express your own freedom, your hurt is going to be of charcoal. And exactly what you're worried about is going to happen. You're going to be looking, you're going to be sitting in a chair 75 years of age wishing you had gone everywhere.
Right.
And you're going to get angry. And there's going to be nobody you can be angry at but yourself, but I'll guarantee you, you'll blame that on your husband. And by the time you're that age, once you finally boot him out, the only thing you're going to find that'll hang out with a 75-year-old woman is another prune. So, under a little intestinal fortitude, get clear, do lesson one of the mastery program, get clear on what your core values are. Instead of waiting for the disease to manifest when you're tired and there's nothing left for you to do, read magazine, I would bite the horns immediately. It's called being honest with how you feel, and anyone that loves you always will accept honesty.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. That's good advice.
I would never tell you to do anything that I haven't done myself.
Okay.
Paul.
Enjoying reading your lessons, too, by the way. They're very well written.
Well, you can thank James for that, because I'm a lousy writer. James takes all my scribble and turns it into something.
Well, James, you're very good, James.
Oh, thank you very much.
Welcome. All right, thanks so much for all this, and I'll be talking to you again. You do this every month?
Once a month, yes.
Great.
Unless you're a student, then it's every week.
Okay. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Any other questions?
Paul, with all the energy we've been talking about in terms of the upcoming election in 2008, which we're in now. In your opinion, your gut feeling, who do you think would be best for this country come November 2008?
Well,
your gut feeling.
You want to hear a Czechism?
Give it to me.
We don't have a government. Well, all we've got is a corporate clearinghouse.
I agree with you. That's why I threw it out to you.
There is no government. There's only corporations that are using people the way a farmer plants potatoes, only to harvest them later, except this harvest lasts for the life of the crop.
You're not kidding.
It's all an illusion. But the reality of it is that unless you're going to devote your life to changing that, my suggestion is to just align yourself with the person who does the best job of lying to you in that their core values seem to align with yours. You'll never know. You see, every time you bring someone into office, isn't it like finding a new lover?
Kind of.
You don't really know what you've got for at least a year, do you? They need to set the system up so that after 1 year or at any point, we can do a national vote to boot the president out, but they'll never do that because that would mean that the president would actually have to listen to the people, wouldn't it?
True.
So there is no presidency. There is no government. That is just a system of control. That is nothing but the white end of the black handle of a police club.
Hmm.
So the reality of it is that we all are left at this point to living our lives to the best of our abilities, and to the best of our ability, we need to become invisible within the system, within the matrix. So the U.S. government has set up what in the mastery program is called a root social matrix. One of my best buddies is a Russian world champion weightlifting athlete who's done many visits to the United States of America, and he was raised during the communist regime. And he said to me, Paul, he said, the United States is the most sold country I've ever been to in my life. He said, you people actually think you're free. You don't even know what freedom is. He said, the difference is they hide the control systems and make it look like they're yours. In our country, everybody knows the rules, and if you don't want to follow the rules, it's real easy. You just get your wallet out, and you pay a fee, and the government turns their eye. In this country, essentially, they make it so that you can't pay a fee unless you're really, really rich, because the people that are running the government are so rich that unless you're offering them millions of dollars, then it's sort of a waste of time. So what they do is they just throw people in jail for coming up with cures for cancer. They throw people in jail for teaching people how to use good drugs. They throw people in jail for becoming publicly verbal about the discrepancies of the government. You don't have a government. But what you do have is an opportunity to teach people how to live in a way that gives them freedom. And this brings me to a very, very important point. In PPS Success Mastery Lesson 1, where I teach you how to establish your core values, I really encourage you to establish core values that are such that when you live by them, you're living a level of truth and a level of honesty and a level of freedom that is literally worth dying for. You read the Constitution given by our founding fathers, if you read the Constitution given by the founding fathers, you will find out we do not have a free country, and we have not had for a long time. So what you've got is an illusion. So I tell my students, live deep, live full, and if you die or get put in jail for the way you were living, the worst thing that happens is everybody looks at your case when it's publicized and says, my God, that guy was honest. My God, that guy was healthy. My God, that guy was happy. My God, that man had well-being. He had happy relationships. Wow. And the next thing you know, you start an avalanche. Because what did you do? You didn't push the horse in the trailer. You put a carrot in front of its nose. Anybody that's truly happy is willing to die in that state. I live my life in a way that if they locked me up today, I'd just laugh. Because all it would do is just make everyone look at my work. I'd sit in jail and write books. Because you can do that even in maximum security. And if the worst thing that happened to me was they killed me, they'd find the books and somehow, some way, they'd get out. And the next thing you know, the government would probably start changing. So my suggestion is, be completely true to your needs and live in such a way that you are truly whole enough to die. Most Americans who think they're free are living in such a twisted, manipulated way that if they die today, all they're going to have to do is take on another body and come back and take a crack at it again, because what pulls you back into a body just as fast as your next breath is desire. And if you're not fulfilling your desires because of your so-called government, then we have a social crisis on our hands. Look at all the money we spend fighting bullshit, ridiculous, deceiving, deceptive wars. Look at all the fake medical research being done. Look at all the destruction of soil in the name of the United States Department of Agriculture. And what you see is that we do not have a government even in the minute way. We have got nothing but a corporate prostitution ring, and that is it.
So with laying that on me, Paul, how do we, I understand when you say go out there and be true to yourself, be true to your core values, but how do you avoid, how do you duck the shots coming in at you that burn your ass every time you see something like that? I mean, if you're sensitive, if you're keeping up with current events, if you're walking around being aware, how do you ward off? You can't live in a shell. How do you ward off?
You're talking to a guy that's about as far out of a shell as a man could live.
Okay.
I don't. Just remember, like attracts like.
Okay.
You attract to you what you are, and you attract your opposite to you. The purpose of PPS Success Mastery Training is to teach you how to use your own mind so that your primary motive is love. The reason I'm on the phone with you right now at essentially 40 minutes beyond the point at which I was supposed to get off the phone is because I love people enough to help empower them to know what the truth is. There's always going to be stuff going on.
But
there always
has been.
Nothing's ever changed.
But
nothing's going
subjective?
To change when you're alive, except it's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse because people have to be pushed to the point of a national reaction before this is going to change. We will have to go to the point of an entire civil uprising against our government, and it's going to happen soon. Why? Because people are spending $5,600 a year on medicine, and we're one of the sickest countries in the world. We no longer have a justice system. We have a president that lies to us about how our money's being spent. We're being told that we're fighting terrorism. One of these days, people are just going to wake up and say, that's enough. And if it takes everybody in Washington, D.C. to tear the fence down and go extract the president, that's what's going to happen, and it's well on the way. So the point very simply is that in the meantime, the best thing you can do is, you know that you're in a matrix, and to the degree that you want to have inner peace and satisfaction, live in a way that's nourishing for you. And if you want to do things that are illegal, but you think that they're essential for your own growth and development, well, then go on vacation and go do that where it's not illegal.
I hear you.
Oh, and that's just how the system works. You either have to work the system or the system works you. But, you know, we all took bodies on and were born in the human dimension so that we could live. And if you're not living, then you're wasting the journey. I live. I love, I have great relationships, I have lots of students, I have friends, I still can get great food, I've spent lots of time finding the organic farms and supporting the organic farmers and really supporting the backbone of the country, the people, helping people. When enough people become brave enough to love themselves and have healthy relationships and be honest in their relationships, most people behave in their relationship with the government the way they behave with their spouses, which is just to ignore the abuse until they die. Well, nobody learns anything living that way. If we become the change, become the person that you see as a real American. Right now, the world thinks Americans are a disease. We got 23 countries with nuclear weapons pointed right at us. Doesn't it ever make you wonder if we're such nice people and we're so supportive of the rest of the globe, why it is that half the bloody world wants to blow us to smithereens and they're just waiting for the right day?
Scary.
Yeah, but you know what? It is scary, but I'll tell you my philosophy. It's reality. And because I know that's an actual fact, I live each day so full that when I put my head on the pillow at night, if I never woke up again, I'd be laughing all the way to the bank because I did it. I spent time in my garden. I traveled around the world and told as many people as I could the simple, true things about life and about health. Taught people how to breathe. I taught them how to exercise. I taught them how to eat. I taught them what psychology really means. I'm complete. Every day for me is a day of absolute bliss. But most people keep on projecting themselves into the future. Oh, I'll do this when. I'll take a vacation when. I'll spend more time with my kids when I have so much money in the bank. And the next thing you know, they turn around, their kids are 20 years old on psychotropic drugs, and they hate their parents. And the parents look at the kids and go, my God, are these our children? What happened? Yeah, they're your children. And the old saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, has a lot of significance. Most people want to medicate their children when they don't realize that actually what they're medicating is a reflection of their own behavior. Right? If people would go on vacation 4 times a year instead of buying up bigger houses and more cars and more stocks and corporations that sell drugs and chemicals, we'd actually start becoming a happy nation of people, and happy people don't start fights. They don't start wars. We'd actually have religions instead of talking about God, would act like gods, and we'd actually start really experiencing love for a change. So I think I better leave it right there and let you go out and enjoy yourself while I enjoy myself so we can all generate love as possible. You've got to realize, we are, human beings are cells in an organism called humanity. Whatever we do for ourselves that brings health, well-being, and happiness, we've automatically done for all the rest of the cells in the organism. Whatever we do that produces cancer in one human being produces cancer in humanity. Right? It doesn't matter if you've got cancer in your knee. It might be 3 feet from your heart, but it's still part of your body. And it drinks from the same blood that nourishes your heart. Well, we all drink the same water. We all breathe the same air. We all walk on the same earth. And we all depend on the same sun. That makes us all one organism because we are inseparable. So thank you guys for participating today, and live dangerously, live fully. That's what Osho would tell you to do. Cut your own path through the desert. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody's so busy following everybody else, no one's paying attention to where they're going until it's too late. When your kids are unhappy and they have grown up thinking that their mother is a Game Boy, we got trouble.
I think, Paul, I think what you have to do is you have to enlighten the hermit. So take that on as your next project.
Enlighten who?
The government.
Well,
no bad, Paul.
You'll know when they've got my message because I'll be in prison.
They'll bag them.
And you know what? No problem. Not a problem because there's a lot of people there that were raised in traumatic families and need somebody that knows how to love them. And if that's where I end up, just know every day that I'm there, I'll be spreading the love in there.
Okay.
I'll teach them how to lift weights. I'll teach them how to eat. I'll teach them scientific methods of praying. I'll teach them how to heal each other. And I'll teach them that if that's where they die, at least they can die happy right there.
You know what my philosophy is as far as all the violence that's happening in today's society? I think that a lot of it has to, and obesity, the two things, I think that a lot of it has to do with the hormones and the antibiotics that are in the foods. I think there's like side effects for people.
Well, that's hormones, the number of chemical factors for sure.
Sorry?
I said there are a number of real chemical influences on people's behavior that do incite violence.
Yeah.
If you'd like to hear something paradoxical, there are several good studies where they went into prisons and switched the foods to whole foods and healthy foods and used nutritional support. And there are studies where they tried experiments changing the color of the paint on the walls to see if it affected behavior. There are literally reams of studies of all the things that they've shown in prison environments decreased violence and improved the health of the prisoners And in every case that I know of, as soon as the study was over, they went right back to the old ways of doing things, even though the research conclusively showed that if they fed them better, changed the scenery, changed the environment, that it would be much better for the prisoners and much less work on the security guards. But every time they put it right back. Why? Because the security guard, the branch of security that security guards are just sort of a loose division of the police force. And if prisoners are behaving, then they don't need so many guards. So what it does, it threatens job security.
Right.
It's exactly what happened with the Internet. A couple of years after the Internet came on, the Postal Service was losing so much money because the number of letters being sent through the mail went down drastically. So what did the United States government do? It hired investigators to see if there was a way they could pass laws to put a surcharge on every email you sent so it was the equivalent of sending a letter in the mail.
Yeah.
But so many people resisted it that they couldn't do it. Well, there you go. There's proof that the people do have power. What we've got to do is wait till the government pokes us where we just don't want to be poked.
Right.
So far, people are pretty numb in the wallet, obviously, and they don't even mind dying by eating garbage food. They don't mind the fact that the corporations are running the country. Here's a checkism for you. Fat, obese children born to fat, obese parents is proof that corporate marketing is sexually transmittable.
Use condoms.
You know, these people are so busy chasing their tails trying to keep up with the Joneses that they have actually forgotten the purpose of life and what it means to live. They think living is just going to a work and punching a time clock, coming home and eating cheese whiz or macaroni and cheese out of the microwave and watching reality TV shows. Americans, the very people that made it across the mountains and migrated west in wagon trains and survived the Indians and the wild, have forgotten that they actually can play sports themselves, that they actually can exercise themselves, and that they actually can have good sex, too. It's time for Americans to start becoming what an American really stands for, which is freedom. Until then, we can do it ourselves because they need teachers. Abraham Lincoln said the best way to help the poor is not to become one of them. And he simply meant that they need guidance. They don't need a bunch of they're crying with them. Have a fantastic rest of your day, wherever you are, and I'm sure that if you get into those mastery lessons, you'll find there's a lot of very, very deep inner exploration that can help bring you to a new level of awareness. And you know what? You can look out your window and see the beauty when you know what you're looking at. It's nothing but the universe. It's all the universe unfolding itself.
Sorry about that. All right, I've got a person
right.
With
you know,
thank you so much, and a happy new year to you all.
Thank you.
Till next time, Paul.
All right, guys, take care.
You
thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.